something is wrong, and it's time to stand up. You are listening to the John Aid Show.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
You found it. You're here. You're headlong down the runaway train that is the Anomic Age, and I'm happy to be with you today. My name's John Age, and I got a great guest coming up for us in just a mere matter of moments. Before we get into that, please check out AnomicAge.com. Share those links. Friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. Like all the likes, subscribe to all the subscriptions. At the bottom there, you can find paypal.me/AnomicAge and patreon.com/AnomicAge as well. If you desire to be a participant, subscriber, or otherwise just donate and support the show, please go ahead and do that. You can find that on everything you're listening to and or watching this on as well. But without further ado, let's get into our guest just a little bit today. We're joined once again, thankfully, by Mr. Michael Volpe. Michael is an investigative journalist who's been doing this for a long time. Today, he's going to get into CPS and family courts once again, or as I like to call it, the darker side of CPS and family courts. He's going to delve into his more recent investigations in Connecticut, California, and Missouri, and also a little bit of this, it's not new, but the gender dysphoria. CPS and family court is now dipping their toes into that as well. So we'll get into that and also much more today with Michael Volpe. Michael, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Indeed.
And I think that the last time you had me on, I had not actually broken the story out of St. Louis County and then Missouri specific, St. Louis County specifically, though, it spreads through Missouri. And I broke it with Megan Fox, who you've had on. She may have talked about it with you. But last year, I was given a video recording that I put on YouTube. And if you go to YouTube and in the search bar, do St. Louis Family Court Corruption. And it's almost 38 corrupt guardian ad litem. And how do you know they're corrupt? Well, because they're on this Zoom conference. And then once you watch and hear what they're talking about, then you understand that anybody who's on this conference who isn't objecting to almost everything said has to be corrupt. And that went viral. It spun a bunch of different ways. And a bunch of the guardian ad litem became notorious, namely a woman named Elaine Podlowski. And in fact, essentially what was happening was Elaine was being sued by a woman named Evita Tolu. And during, and it was a guy named James Reed who would be brought in as an evaluator, and another woman named Jennifer Van Leeuwen who would then be brought in as a therapist. And they found several cases besides Evita's where that combination was used, and it was the same kind of a pattern where Elaine would ignore abuse, and then Reed would find some sort of bogus disorder to slap usually mom with, just a label, and then they bring in Van Leeuwen to say these kids are so screwed up Van Leeuwen has to fix it. And it was not essential, it was a racket. And here they were on this conference. What was happening was Evita had filed a lawsuit. It was moving forward. And at the same time, at that time, there was this email newsletter that popped up that they called Daily Docket News. And it was just like from an email account. So it wasn't clear who was doing it. But whoever it was seemed to know Elaine pretty well because it was basically like targeted email marketing, and like her colleagues would get it. She, during the conference, said, people at my church are getting it. My neighbors are getting it. And so obviously a random person isn't able to know the email addresses of your neighbors and your church and your colleagues. So someone close to Elaine seemed to like have something going on. And this, what was crazy was it didn't just unnerve Elaine. It unnerved the entire like core of these nearly 40 guardian ad litem. And the reason being is because they all behave that way. So At one point, one of them, I think her name is Amy Diemer, goes, Elaine, if they take you down, we're next. And then it's about 32 minutes in, the person who speaks the most, her name is Sarah Pleben. She got these big glasses, so you can't miss her. So she says this threatens to take down the entire system. Judges are in on it. And so both Megan and I broke a bunch of different stories related to St. Louis County. One just outrageous and horrible thing is that we found at least three cases where sexual abuse is absolutely being covered up, and the kids are being forced to live with the sexual abuser, and they're constantly labeling, and it's always the mom in this case. And it's not always the mom. We found plenty of dads, just this particular pattern was always the mom being labeled with parental alienation, and that's how they were moving the kids from mom to the sexual abusers. That was Vandenberg is one case. That girl, who I think is 11 or 12, has disclosed so many times, has lost track, teachers, everyone. Angela Freiner, hers is a very interesting case. And then the last one is Melissa Hagemeyer. And her daughter was so crazy. Her daughter was being investigated by the cops for potential sexual molestation as the court was forcing her daughter to live with dad. And then his lawyer tried to subpoena and depose the cops invested, like the detective that was investigating the case. And I think that was eventually shut down, but that's how aggressive his lawyer is. So just three cases of that. There's a guy named Ken Rosa. That's an example of a man who had gotten screwed, and he had Elaine Podlowski, and he hadn't seen his daughter in years. One of the most interesting things was that so what they wanted to do was all contribute to a fund where Elaine could pay some sort of like forensic tech person to figure out who is Daily Docket News. And I think they might have, because Daily Docket News was sending emails for a while and then it just stopped. And so they may have figured it out, but they at one point said, maybe we'll put it into our IOLTA account. That's IOLTA. Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly what that stands for, but if you look it up, it's an account that's dedicated to like legal services for poor people. Okay. Now they were wanting to pool their money so they give Elaine Podlowski a bunch of money so she could hire a forensic person. Elaine is not poor. She's got a nearly $1 million house, big car. She makes hundreds of thousands, not millions a year. She is not the sort of person you use an IOLTA account for. So that's just one of the many examples of if you were on this call and you were honest, you would have spoken up. About 8 minutes in, I don't remember what the woman's name is, but she starts talking about a case and she's not on the case and she's giving very specific details of the case because it appears that the lawyers were essentially gossiping to her about a case completely improper. They're also talking about having ex parte meetings with judges, mainly a guy named Michael Burton. And so we were able to create a lot of publicity and a little bit you should know St. Louis, the city, is its own county, and then St. Louis County is right next door. But so the St. Louis like TV market, the city's TV market would cover this. So we got some publicity a little bit, but this shows like we've come pretty far on this, but you still have a long ways to go, because even though number one, you have this Zoom conference that everyone locally should be covering, and there's no excuse not to, like, it's outrageous that these like nearly 40 guardian ad litem are scheming this way. They're on tape. You can quote from the tape, you know, you can try to get comments from them, but there's no excuse for you as a local media not to cover this. This is very explosive. And one station, KMOV, covered it a little bit. Megan did a couple of things with a radio station. She did another radio guy, Nick Reed, and he's not even from St. Louis County, but he's close. And that was, and then the local like legal trade journal covered it a little bit, and that was it. And it should have received a lot of coverage locally. And if it had, a lot more would have happened. So we carried it for a while and then they refused to cover it. And then the other thing is, I talked to a few people in like near the Kansas City, Missouri area, and they have their own ring with their own guardian ad litem. They basically behave the same way. And essentially, most of the counties in Missouri behave the way that St. Louis County does, but most of them don't have a Zoom conference where you can identify all of them all at once. And let me circle back. I just remember, circle back like Jen Psaki. Angela Freiner, her daughter, surreptitiously recorded herself confronting the judge in court saying, "You can't send me to my dad. He's a child molester. He's going to molest me." And the judge, her name is Nicole Zellweger, says, "I don't care," basically. And in fact, she was sent. She went to a psych ward, to some sort of like camp, and wound up at dad's. And then 8-9 months later, the same girl testified and said, "I was just screwed up. Dad is great." But by this point, she had spent like 8 months completely away from her mom and now in the control of dad. And but no one. And what was interesting was no one asked her about the specific allegations. No one said, "Well, were you molested like you said in this secretly recorded recording?" They would just say, when you were in court in, I think it was January of 2021, what was your state of mind? What was your mood?" And she would, "I was in a bad place. I was this, I was that." And so now she's basically living full time with dad. And, if he's a child molester, which she said he was, who knows what's happening in that particular home. And so that uncovered all kinds of corruption. And I think that's the closest that a family court story has come to really penetrating the mainstream. But I talked to one local reporter. His name is Chris Nagus, and he was the one who did the KMOV story, which some people thought was a little weak. I recently watched it again. I thought it was good. But he told me that he didn't say it in so many words, but part of the problem is it's like very difficult to do these and to get it approved because the threat of the lawsuit is so high. And so that's still what you're facing. And from that, a whole bunch of different stories from around the world basically came to both Megan and I. And I don't know if she told you, but we interviewed a guy named Grant Wyeth, who's from Australia.
Yeah, we didn't mention him at all.
And a woman named Liz Perkins, who's from England, and they are two journalists. And they basically found very similar things in terms of how the family court works in those two countries. The one main difference is in both England and Australia, the courts are far less, even less transparent. And so these recordings would definitely not be allowed. You could go to jail if you try to record these kinds of hearings. You certainly can't just put them on YouTube. In England, the only thing you can report on specific to the case is anything the judge allows.
And are these illegal because they're minors and they're just saying that it's illegal to record a minor, or is it the nature of the case? I mean, what's the legality?
Kind of both, but because the privacy of the minor is sacrosanct. So you can't record it. And obviously that's supposed to be weighed up against the argument that we have open court. And in the US, it's a little bit different. They do that sometimes, but most of these courts, we're going to talk about that gender dysphoria. That was an open hearing that I recorded. And it's it's not 100%. The other thing is I worked a lot in North Carolina, and most of their hearings are actually recorded officially, and you can then get the official recording. And most of the time it's free. And especially if you live in North Carolina, sometimes they had to send it to me, so I paid for the postage. But so I think courts are going that way, where they're just going to have an official recording that everybody records anyway. And so we are far more transparent as courts than either England or Australia. And look, this is everywhere. But the problem we found is global. And so the other thing is I recently interviewed a guy. And then let me give you one other thing, named Brian Godier. And he is in St. Charles County, which is kind of close to St. Louis County. And one of the things he told me is he often goes to court in St. Charles County. And a lot of the guardian ad litem that were on the Zoom conference popped up now in St. Charles County. It's like they're trying to, on a sly, quietly move over where they're less well-known and notorious. Because now, just about every garden ad litem who was on that call is notorious. So basically, widespread corruption all throughout the family courts. And we watched a few criminal hearings as well. And their DA over in St. Louis doesn't seem to be that great. I don't think that they're handling their criminal cases all that well. Look, they're not going after these child molesters very hard at all. And Angela Freiner...
I don't want to get you off track, but I was going to ask you this earlier, and I don't want to forget about it. Did you figure out, or did you already say, and I missed it, who was sending these emails to these people in the very beginning of our conversation? I mean, that seems to be like an obvious,
I don't know,
chilling effect.
The email was dailydocketnews@gmail.com. So dailydocketnews@gmail.com. Who knows? I'd just be speculating. It's either maybe a ticked off former employee, maybe a ticked off former litigant, but who would know the email address? I mean, whoever it was knows Elaine pretty well, even if Elaine doesn't know that. And it was, it's the thing I liked about it is it's very similar in this way to what Los Pepes, who were the drug dealers who bar. It's similar in this way in that, like, they use your tactics against you, and they sort of flip the script. And by, like, targeting your friends, your relatives, your colleagues, like, you turn the tables on Elaine. And obviously it unnerved her. Go watch the video. All of these people are unnerved. I don't know who it is, but I haven't received one in probably a year. So either the individual decided to stop, which is possible, though it was having a good effect, or they were caught. But these folks were determined to figure out who Daily Docket News is and to go after Daily Docket News once they found out, which is troubling if you believe in the First Amendment. And Elaine called it cyber stalking. And look, it's cyber stalking in the sense that obviously this whole emailed newsletter is designed strictly to target her with as much bad stuff as possible. But she's not even getting most of the emails. But, what the emailed newsletter was doing was identifying these bad cases, like the Vandenberg case and other cases, and saying, here's what these folks were doing. And you can hear Pleben about like 31, 32 minutes in saying, only a few of us on this call haven't even been targeted yet. And it's coming. Basically the emailed newsletter, and then later on, Megan and I and other people were then looking around and finding corrupt cases that involved some or more of the guardian ad litem on the call. And people should know there are, this was like a prearranged Zoom conference. There are other guardian ad litem who are corrupt in St. Louis County who just weren't on that particular call because they, people are busy. But so there's even more corruption than just the people that you see. And then at one point, one of the guardian ad litem says, this goes way beyond just the 38 of us. There's a lot of lawyers who want to help. So that means you basically got all of the guardian ad litem, the lawyers involved in this who are in on the racket, on the scheme. And so essentially what's happening all around the country and to a certain degree the world is there's a racket that goes on in family courts. And the goal for the court is to identify a problem. Any problem will do. Often it's a problem they're either creating or at least contributing to. And then the solution to that problem is the appointment of someone at $200 an hour, let's say, or maybe a little less, or maybe a little more. Mm-hmm. And then once that person's appointed, their goal is to maximize billing and then to get some more people appointed and to identify more problems. And you go on and on and on. And that's basically the scheme they had in St. Louis County. And that's why they were afraid. That's why those three people were being sued, Elaine Podlowski, James Reed, and Jennifer Van Leeuwen, because once Podlowski comes on, her goal is to get Reed on. And then when Reed comes on, his goal is to diagnose you with something that could bring Van Leeuwen out, or if not Van Leeuwen, one of her friends, and then Van Leeuwen comes on. She, probably her goal is to find, to figure out a way to say, because of this, we need another person to come on. And that's basically what's happening in these courts. They're not there to solve any problems. They are there to maximize billing, and they're there to maximize the number of people who can be appointed to the case to maximize billing as well. And if you're going through this and your lawyer or anybody else suggests that a guardian ad litem or an evaluator or anyone is what's necessary, what's needed right now to fix things, they don't have your best interest at heart. They're never what's needed. And so that brings me, I did some stuff in Orange County, California. So over there, I found a fascinating document. It's, I called it a report. It's actually a bunch of slides for what was a webinar. Mm-hmm. And so I don't remember the title of the webinar, but it, number one, it was one of the people who did the webinar. Her name is Nicole Schmidt. And all there were five people who did it. They were all these court actors, these people who were either attorneys sometimes, or they were court appointees. So they would be the guardian ad litem or the custody evaluator who was being appointed. And so the whole webinar is, in this situation, here's who you need to appoint, and here's what they can do, and here's what they can't do. Here's the positive, here's the negative. And so that seems like it's good, except a few things. Number one, in the middle of it, they have this phrase that's a total giveaway where they say, I'm just protecting the well-being of my child equals I hate my ex. And so that's how the court treats abuse allegations. Hmm. They're not really abuse allegations. You're just saying that because you hate your ex.
Yeah.
And second thing is, this is basically like a how-to guide. If you're reading this, whatever the situation is, you look at it and go, oh, so I need to get this person appointed. And this is how they maximize all of their appointments. And so in Orange County, I found its own like racket. And one of the main players over there is a woman named Miriam Galindos. She is like the custody evaluator most of the time. And she figures out ways to bring in her friends, her guardian ad litem and other friends. And so they have their own racket with their own set of players. And then they have this webinar. But what was even more interesting was in Orange County, I also found all kinds of corruption in their conservatorship. And so what they're doing is they are putting mostly old folks into what they call a conservatorship. In other states, it's called guardianship. Mm-hmm. They isolate them from their families, and then they pilfer their estates, primarily looking for estates with a lot of real estate in it, and then they sell the real estate. And it was two people primarily. It was a woman named Sally Cicerone, Cicerone, and Teresa Gorman. And then Gorman works with her husband, whose name is Ruben Martinez, who's a real estate broker. So Gorman or Cicerone come on, they make sure the other person's appointed, and then they make sure the old person winds up in conservatorship. They sell off all their assets. They sell the real estate. They use Gorman's husband, and then they sell it under market value probably to one of their friends, who then turns around and flips it for the actual worth, and then everybody probably splits the difference. And the other thing people should know is Cicerone's already been busted, except Gorman's still allowed to operate with her husband. So you got schemes all over the place. Orange County is pretty close to San Diego. And obviously Orange County is not the only place that this happens. And we talk a lot about family court, CPS, but people should know guardianship, conservatorship. It's the same type of thing, very similar. And if you want to know more, there's a great movie on Netflix called I Care a Lot, which is extremely realistic. And the main character, she's like one of these Teresa Gormans. In fact, she was partially modeled by after a woman named April Parks, you can look up, who's from Nevada, who's one of these like guardian type people who comes into conservatorship cases, takes them over. Because what happens once you're placed in a guardianship, you have very few rights. So your guardian can sell off your assets, can do almost anything. And that's what Parks did. That's what the woman did in I Care a Lot. That's what Gorman does. And if you think those three are the only three, you are very, very wrong. There's tens of thousands of them right now with their meat hooks, if you will, in the middle of like millions of estates that they're right now pilfering, and nobody really cares. And it goes on almost unencumbered. And guardianship also gets very, very little publicity, even though it happens a lot. And, you know, if you think it's terrible what's happening to our kids, look at what's happening to our elderly. And a couple of other ones, I did something in Connecticut. Here's what people should know about Connecticut. It's been so corrupt for so long that the first person who contacted me most recently was, oh my God, Karen. I can't remember. Ambrose, her ex-husband's name is Chris Ambrose. Yeah. And so Karen contacts me and she writes this long email. And in the middle of the email, she goes, I don't want to be the next Susan Skip. And Susan Skip is a notorious Connecticut case that was, I've written about it. It was in my 2015 article called Making Divorce Pay. It's in a book called Worst Interest of the Child. She's been written about in other places. And the case is over a decade old, and she hasn't seen some of her kids for about a decade now. And so basically Karen was worried that her kids were going to be snatched the same way and she'd be kept away from them, and she saw a lot of parallels. But in Connecticut, there's a Democratic state, I think, representative. Her name is Minnie Gonzalez, who's actually taken this on, which is excellent. She's very courageous. But the problem is, when you're one politician taking it on, no matter what, you don't have the votes, because it always takes more than just your vote. So she's definitely publicized it, including Susan's case. But publicity has helped, and she's been threatening a lot of other things. But it's not enough. But what people should know is there's been so much coverage of the issue in Connecticut that that the woman who reached out to me knew about one of the cases and could draw parallels. So that's been covered a lot. And the other interesting thing was, right at the same time that I was covering it, a guy named Wayne Dolcefino covered it. He's near Houston. And a guy named Frank Parlato, and he broke NXIVM. I don't know how it's pronounced, but that's the cult that was branding people. The huge story, and he broke it. And he actually did a lot of Karen's story. He's done over 20 posts on it. But we all three of us have found a whole bunch of corruption. And in that state in particular, there's a custody evaluator named Jessica Byron Caverly. So she's the equivalent of this guy, Reed. She's the equivalent of Galindo. So she comes in, gives you the bogus evaluation, and then that bogus evaluation is used to get a bunch of other people onto the case. And it's used to put kids into dangerous situations, either with abusers or mentally unstable people. One of the people I talked to that Wayne also worked on, Rory Doyle, his ex-wife tried to commit suicide, a whole bunch of other things. She's gotten sole custody, largely based on Caverly's evaluation. Karen was involved in her case, a woman named Jerise Tiberi, same thing. And it's like it's cookie cutter. It's always something like borderline personality disorder. It's a label. They're labeling you.
That sounds like a playbook that they're running here.
I'm not saying borderline personality disorder exists. If you're James Reed, it's like 89% of the population seems to have it. Yeah. It's not nearly in the number. You know, based on the fact that if you look up how many people actually have it and how often he diagnoses it, obviously he's misdiagnosing it, because his is like 20 times more. Same thing with Caverly, same thing with Galindo. And that's how you know. And look, these people have been doing this for a decade and more. How many kids have they screwed up? How many parents have they destroyed? Thousands, tens of thousands. That's just these three. There's probably tens of thousands of them all over the country. We've got time for a couple more, right? Yeah.
So much of this stuff just seems cookie cutter, man. I mean, it seems like somebody figured this out. Yo, if we play this card, then we get the kids, or then we can manipulate the kids into going with this parent or the other. Or even, a similar scenario with the stealing of elderly
money. Yep, absolutely. Somebody asked. They created a racket. Absolutely. It's a racket. It's a well-oiled machine. And I don't know if there's an actual textbook, but all of these people seem to know. So whether there's a textbook or not, they're learning it. Absolutely. Galindo is not that different from Caverly. She lives on one coast. Caverly lives on the other coast. That's the difference. So case out of near Chicago, Illinois. Venkatesh Bhogireddy, that's Bhogireddy. He's the husband. Usha Carey as the wife. He abused her, he raped her, he stole from her. All of that sounds very, very cookie cutter. Here's the hook of this story. He's right now in a federal prison because he attempted to kill her uncle. Why did he want to kill her uncle? Well, according to undercover recordings, because her uncle was helping to finance the divorce, and if he could get rid of the uncle, he would win the divorce. And also he told us, it was an undercover ATF agent, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, I think is the full title. Yeah. But he told the guy that he did want his wife killed, but the timing wasn't right. Because if he killed her now, everybody would know it was him. So, you know, just whack the uncle. He's basically doing like a, I get more business for you down the road if you do a good job on this one. So he's been convicted now. And the family court is slow walking. But while they're slow walking, there's a guardian ad litem already appointed. Her name is Lynn Wypych, W-Y-P-Y-C-H, and an evaluator appointed. And I'm not going to remember the evaluator's name, but they're now evaluating whether or not he should get like regular but supervised. Obviously, it would have to be supervised custody time through Zoom with his kids while he's in jail. So here's how brilliant the scam is. And Wypych, there's an email that I got where she's like, I'm probably going to approve it. But so she does want him to get the supervised time. Keep in mind, he's convicted of killing his ex-wife's, trying to kill his ex-wife's uncle. He told a cop, I want to kill my wife. It's just, you know, the timing is not right. And this woman thinks he should have regular custody time with his children, as if somebody this dangerous should be anywhere near his kids. As if you don't understand that people like this, all they do is manipulate.
Yeah.
So already, whether this is approved or not, you have Wypych, who's on the case. She's not going anywhere because this decision is months away. You have this other evaluator. No matter what she decides, the evaluator's getting paid. And then Wypych said, if this gets approved, I've already found a guy who charges $100 per session to oversee the Zoom conference. You see how brilliant Wypych is? She comes on, she creates this case that she can stay on. She's put her friend on. And once this thing gets approved, she's got another friend who's ready to go. All three of them are going to make tons and tons of money. These kids are going to be forced to try to have some sort of crazy relationship with this very, very dangerous guy. And Usha, I interviewed her last time recently, like just in the last few days. She's afraid for her life because she thinks that the law is really not protecting her, because if the guy is convicted of this and they're still trying to force a relationship, what happens when he's released? And so the last thing is a case out of Kane County. And I found this by accident. So I was on a Zoom call or something that was like a court proceeding. And it was several different cases. I was on for another case. And the case, the last name is Murphy, and it was the most amazing thing I'd heard in a while. And you can find this on my site, michaelvolpe.substack.com. And so the first person to speak is the guardian ad litem. Then you hear from dad's attorney. Then you hear from mom's attorney. The judge interrupts, and they go back and forth. And so this guardian ad litem is explaining how two other appointed like psychologists or psychiatrists or therapists who are not on this call, how they vociferously disagree with each other, and they blame each other for how screwed up the kids are and how screwed up are the kids. Well, at least one of the two, I think, has gender dysphoria. So they haven't switched, but they're not comfortable in the gender they're in. They're considering switching. And also either that same kid or the other kid has tried to kill themselves, and they're now in outpatient therapy. And the guardian ad litem is very confused because the two therapists have different views. So he's not ready to give his report. In fact, he's not even sure why the kid tried to kill themselves. Dad's attorney and dad blame mom for the gender dysphoria. But here's the best part. Since there's so much confusion, the guardian ad litem suggests what we really need is a custody evaluator. And then dad's attorney comes on, and dad's attorney, and remember, dad thinks mom's the one creating the gender dysphoria. So dad's attorney said, yeah, to tie this all in a bow, and I think that's an exact quote from Dad's attorney, to tie this all in a bow, we probably do need a custody evaluator. So think about Dad's attorney. Think about how scummy this guy is. Somehow, even after a guardian ad litem has been appointed, two therapists have been appointed, and none of this stuff has been settled, he somehow has convinced Dad. Now, if we can just get this fourth person on, once they're on, everything will get straightened out. Now, this happened like a week and a half ago, and then here's the best part. So the guardian ad litem, I don't know when they're supposed to have a report, but it's not ready yet. So the guardian ad litem says another 4 to 6 weeks. So the judge writes a temporary order to give them a custody arrangement, and he goes, we'll be back on July 19th. So we have at least one child who's thinking about switching genders, at least one child who's killing themselves, but we'll keep things steady, and then we'll come back here on July 19th, and hopefully neither of the kids will be dead by then. And that's basically what you got in this case. And that's behind my paywall. So if you want to pay for it, you can listen to the entire hearing. There's nothing you or I can say that's as powerful as actually listening to one of these hearings. And if you don't believe that it's as screwed up as I say it is, just listen to all of these people go back and forth trying to make decisions on this family's behalf and realize no decisions are ever going to be made. And the whole thing is designed strictly just to get more and more people on board. And that's why you hear them all say, we need a custody value to tie it in a bow.
That's just sick,
you
man.
You need that fourth person, and then that fourth person will lead to a fifth and a sixth and a seventh. And in the meantime, I guarantee you, these two kids, I think there were two, will be even more screwed up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to belittle anybody that's got borderline personality disorder or gender dysphoria, but it seems to me that they're grasping the most tenuous diagnoses while ignoring the most obvious, where we got people that have been physically abused. We've got clear evidence of this, but we're going to put them with abusers, but we're going to go with this tenuous diagnosis.
Correct.
You know, you nailed it earlier when you were talking about this quackery that this is, man.
Oh yeah, no, it's all total quackery. But because borderline personality disorder is very extreme, so if you have it, you know you're really bad, you're really dangerous, and that's why people like Reed constantly diagnose people with it, because that gives you the reason, the excuse. And yes, in most of those cases, there are abuse allegations against the other parent. And that's basically how they spin it. It's not really abuse. This person has borderline personality disorder. That's why they're like forcing the kid to say it. They're manipulating the kid because of this borderline personality disorder. And as I said, the amount of times that Reed has found BPD is like 30 times as much as the actual percentage of the population. That's how you know that it's bogus. But yeah, look, these diagnoses, labels is what I call them, they're a tool. If your goal is to put the kid with a certain parent because that parent is abusive and that'll create a case that will never end, and that's what you want, then here's like four or five things I can find of the other parent, and that'll justify me putting it with this parent. So it's basically just throw a dart in the wall, maybe put them in a hat, pick one out, and oh, okay, this person's that. And yeah, there's almost, in fact, go to watch the KMOV one. Like they go through the diagnoses of Vita, like how did he find this? And it was all quackery, all based on complete nonsense. And I believe that Reed is no longer doing these. So we were able to get him basically sidelined. And the other thing is, and this is back in Missouri in St. Louis, there was a judge who was constantly being referred to. His name is Michael Burton. And in fact, he wrote a very explosive email, and all the guardian ad litem were supposed to go to a meeting with him. I don't know why the judge would have a meeting with all of these guardian ad litem. He stepped down, and he clearly was run out because he didn't even find a job. He was going to go to Notre Dame and take some classes, and he's in his 60s. Mm-hmm. The University of Indiana. He retired suddenly and abruptly and said, I'm going to take leadership classes at the University of Notre Dame. So apparently he couldn't even get a cushy job being a law professor, which any judge could get if they wanted to retire. There's like 5 million universities that would, oh, you're a former judge, you know. Who wouldn't want a former judge to be a law professor? And so he clearly his reputation was hurt. And I did talk to a state legislator who told me that five males from like in the Missouri area who told me that five males had come to them and this individual had looked into the cases and they were like, yeah, this is as bad as you're reporting. And we were supposed to do a podcast and then I got ghosted. So I haven't heard back from the politician, but the politicians are hearing you. They're just not quite courageous enough yet to step forward and tell their story. And look, that would help a lot if the politicians who are they're definitely hearing from the litigants, from the victims, because the victims are calling all the time and keep calling. If you had this happen to you or you know someone or you're just interested in the issue, tell the politicians because it is registering. And the more you put it like on their radar, the better chance there is that that somebody's going to do something. One last thing with my friend Greg Penglis, who runs a show called Action Radio, he allows like citizens to write bills. And I wrote a bill that will not fix all of this, but I do like this bill. And I called it the Elaine Podlowski Act. And I modeled it for Missouri, but any state could have it. But in the state of Missouri, the court shall not appoint a guardian ad litem, custody evaluator, or any other third party in all matters of divorce and child custody. The court shall only hear from the lawyers, the two parents, and any evidence and witnesses they may call. So if you want to really try to fix this, just eliminate all of these court appointments and see how much better the system is when the Elaine Podlowskis of the world, because her friend Sarah Pleben said, this threatens to take down the entire system. So I wrote a law that would actually take down the entire system. So you would... if you implemented that law, you'd just get rid of all the guardian ad litem. The court would not be able to appoint these people and see what happens. This case, that gender dysphoria,
yeah,
you wouldn't have the guardian ad litem. You wouldn't have the two therapists who don't agree with each other. You wouldn't have the specter of the custody evaluator. The two parents and their lawyers would have to figure it out. I bet that if the court just like issued this order, like a stay order, I think is what they call it, and they said for the next 6 months, we're not getting involved any way, shape, or form. You two have to figure it out with your kids. And if you want lawyers, that's up to you. I bet, even I don't know if it'll be figured out. I don't know how screwed up everybody is. But I bet it'll be a lot better if those two parents don't have the court or a guardian ad litem to go to complain about the other parent. They just have to deal directly with each other. I think they'd figure it out a lot better.
Man. I always say the same things we talk, man. This stuff is so sick. It's uncomfortable mm-hmm. to talk about. I swear it is. But, I mean, something that keeps boggling my mind is how the bleep are they allowed to keep – I mean, you know, there's the rules against witness tampering and rules against stalking and rules against coercion and all this stuff in these cases. But clearly that's what seems to be going on when you got manipulation of these different people. I mean, it's not too far removed from the old Godfather – the horse in the bed thing, you know, there's not going quite that far, but they may as well.
No, they are. And I got a recording this morning of a reunification therapist basically coercing and threatening a child into the therapy and saying, if you don't do this, your mom's going to get in trouble. You're absolutely right. And Elaine, it is being appealed, but Elaine got the lawsuit dismissed for something called quasi-judicial immunity. Judges have basically almost absolute immunity. So if you sue them, it'll just get thrown out. These guardian ad litem, at least in Missouri, the immunity isn't quite as strong, but basically. And so essentially what the court said was, even if this was true, we don't care. We'll still throw it out. And so that's how powerful somebody like Elaine Podlowski is. They get away with it. And essentially by law and laws that somebody passed. Yeah. It is sick. Look, one of the reasons is because it doesn't get enough coverage. So the more you talk about it, I don't know how powerful Elaine Podlowski is now, but we've talked about her a lot. And I can't imagine that she gets a lot of appointments anymore, because anytime somebody suggests her, hopefully one of the parents looks her up and then they find out what's going on. You got all these videos and everything else out there. And so that's one of the reasons why this happens, because not enough media coverage. And it was the responsibility of the St. Louis area media to talk about it. Do you know how many parents go through that court system and you're not telling them that there's almost 40 of these guardian ad litem who might wind up on your case, who are completely corrupt, who were in a brazen manner talking about ex parte communication they would have with lawyers, with judges, who were scheming to misdirect when they sent money so that no one would know where it's going or how it's going there. At one point, this guy Art Nissenbaum said, and this is how they view parents. You know, a lot of these folks, they have personality disorders. That's why they act this way. That's what they think of you, that you're all screwed up and you deserve exactly what we give you. And the St. Louis media didn't think the parents should be aware of this.
That's just, I mean, it's
Megan Fox did, we early on, and it was more her, I helped a little, but it was mostly Megan. She organized a press conference. And I think there's four local TV stations. They all showed up. They all had a camera person. They all videotaped. It went on for at least an hour, and none of them played any of it. And I don't even understand. Why would you all show up if you're not planning on using it? That makes no sense. And it was like some snake story, you know, the ice cream truck and something else. That's what they played that day instead of this. So that's how much they care about this stuff. And it's let me get back to Connecticut, and it's the same thing. So at the same time, and I should have mentioned, Dolcefino, he started his own company, but he had won 30 local Emmys, three investigative reporters and editors awards, which are both are obviously very prestigious, and 30 is just off the charts, amazing. So this guy is huge. He comes in, does a couple of things on Connecticut. Frank Parlato broke NXIVM. I did a few things all roughly the same time. And has it had an effect? Kind of, a little. But the problem is still, you have to get it in the Connecticut area, and they won't touch it. So as we sit here now, local media does very little, a little bit. But most of the time, if it's explosive like this, they're not going to touch it. And that's one of the reasons why, to this day, it still hasn't quite broken through. Because you need buy-in from the local media. Because guess what? It's much easier to market, and it's much more effective. Like if in St. Louis County, we're talking about Elaine Podlosky, because that's where she is. That's where the people she interacts with. That's where the people should know who she is, not someone in Nebraska or Utah. You're never going to run into her. So you could know her name, but that's not going to help you as much. So, the media that needs to cover it isn't covering it. Other media is. And I do think we're going through a slow evolution where as the technology changes and the media changes, all of these dynamics will be different. But right now, the media that needs to cover it isn't covering it.
And it's so egregious. I know I'm going to ask you this. I know there's no way of knowing, but what happens to the children in all these scenarios? Because, I mean, I can't even imagine so many of them probably just say, well, screw this. I'm just going to run away. I'm just going to go live in a box somewhere as opposed to getting molested. I mean, if they're old enough, of course, like the younger ones, they're just screwed. I mean, unfortunately, I hate to say that, but, I mean, what in the world is going on here?
Kara Witkowski, that's a very notorious case out of Kane County, the same county with the gender dysphoria. Her nearly three-year-old son died being molested by his dad, that they were covered. They're still covering it up. No one's been charged with that murder. He was almost three. It was October 31st, 2019. And he died. And they call it like an unexplained death. I'm like, oh, yeah, because three-year-olds always die, and you just can't explain how they die. So he died. Some kids run. Some kids get really, really screwed up. Some kids dissociate because they're molested so often. They become dissociative. Hmm. So a lot of different things happen. Some kids survive it. Some kids then get attached to the abuser because they know that's the only parent figure they have. So in order to survive, like what I think is happening in Angela Feiner's case. But yeah, no, you are creating a generation's worth of mental problems that often, like, if you're interacting with that now adult, you'll have no idea. They're not going to share all of these things with you. But I think everyone is indirectly affected because I say this happens in at least 1 in 100 families. And so if you go to camp or go to school, or your kids do, at some point you're going to interact with thousands of kids. I guarantee you some of them are going through something like this. And so the local bully or the local weird kid, you know, the kid who's cutting themselves, doing other things that's disturbing your kid, that may be why. And then some of that disturbance is like falling on your kid, or I don't know if your kid confronts that kid and they get beat up because they've got all this pent up rage and anger and aggression from being abused. That'll happen. So all kinds of things. It depends on each individual case. I've talked with kids. It depends on the level of abuse, and some kids are more resilient, but none of them leave it like unfazed. They're all, they're all affected in one way or the other. It's not necessarily that every kid is completely screwed up, and it depends again on the level of abuse. If it's more just verbal and emotional abuse, that's a little bit easier to handle than say. Than psychological sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And so it depends on how screwed up they are. But look, in Ken Rose's case, one or two of his children grew up for like 5 years without a father. So regardless of the level of other abuse by mom, what do you think it's like to not even have a father in your life? They're screwed up in 100 different ways. And yeah, you're creating all kinds of big problems. And, you know, there won't, if this explodes into some sort of like mental health crisis, I doubt anyone's going to put two and two together. People will wonder. And look, and we should mention this, you know, who loves this is Big Pharma. Because in a lot of the, not every case, but a lot of these cases, then part of the treatment is like a whole batch of drugs that Big Pharma is making to deal with all kinds of stuff. You've got a generation's worth of kids who have all kinds of trauma that they're developing, drug habits, being the target of abuse, all kinds of things. It's terrible.
And I mean, I think you just nailed it, maybe without even knowing it. I think everything we're seeing right now in our society, if you look at, I mean, off the charts, mental problems, off the charts, abusing themselves, abusing other people, pharmaceutical drugs, recreational drugs. I mean, right. I got to laugh to keep from crying because it's so sick, but I can't help but think that all this collateral damage, I mean, sadly, you focused on 3-4 states here today.
That's
and
today.
God only knows what's going on in the other 46 and 47. I mean,
I've talked to people in almost every state. I've done a lot in Texas, Pennsylvania, or two other states, New York, New Jersey, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina. Actually, not that much in Illinois, but I think Illinois is pretty screwed up itself. I'd say because the way the system is designed, it's designed to be corrupt. So I doubt that there's many places in the U.S. where it's functioning properly, because judges are given all this enormous power. They don't really know what they're doing. And then they have the power to appoint a bunch of people, and they all make money based on hourly billing. Well, you don't maximize the hourly billing if you solve problems, because if you solve problems, then you are no longer needed. So they design the system to never solve problems. And that's why I see the pattern everywhere. What I saw in Orange County is an actual how-to manual to maximize it. Same thing in St. Louis. So what we saw is all of the corrupt, not all, but most of the corrupt guardian ad litem actually get on the same Zoom conference and be foolish enough to do that. But there are probably 40 some corrupt guardian ad litem in most of the counties. We just don't have a Zoom conference to identify them easily. But if I was given the time and the financial backing, I can probably go into any county and identify 30 to 40 corrupt guardian ad litem and give you all of the cases that they're on and explain how they're corrupt. And my guess is that most, if not all, of these counties operate similarly to what you see in St. Louis County and other counties.
And I think it's so much of it's kind of like the out of sight, out of mind thing. I mean, the average guy or girl just going, I got my little house and my little spot of nothing. I can't handle what's going on over here and over there.
Right. As I said, but maybe your kid's being bullied.
Yeah.
who's the bully? Do you know? Maybe that kid's going through it. You'll experience it one way or the other. And even if you're not going through it, your kid may experience it. And then those kids are not, like, they're very difficult to understand and explain and deal with. So, you know, if your child then gets in the way of the child that's being abused, because, you know, that they can take out that anger and aggression on your child, on someone else.
That old adage, hurt people hurt people. I mean, that's what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's cyclical with so much of the sexual abuse. I mean, they become abusers later on, 9 times out of 10. So.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. And you're just totally allowing it. And the other thing I found is I don't think police are very good at investigating child molestation. I need to see some statistics, but I've talked with so many people who brought all kinds of evidence to police and just nothing ever happens. And it's more than a few, it's more than it's anecdotal, and it's a lot of different police departments. And one thing I've found is they often cede to CPS, Child Protective Services, so they let them run an investigation. And then if those guys find something, then they'll take it over. But if CPS doesn't find anything, well, then they just close their investigation. And CPS isn't equipped to do this. You are the cops. Doesn't matter what CPS says. So that's very poor. We don't deal with domestic violence very well in this country, and we don't really understand child molestation very well. And those are two very serious issues. And yeah, it creates all kinds of screwed up people.
Yeah, somebody mentioned this on the show just the other day that, at least more recently in this country, people are very sort of adverse to taking action. If they see somebody bleeding or somebody hurt, oh, we called 911, and they're absolved mm-hmm. of all action. We did our part. And I think mm-hmm. kind of what you just said, I think is probably what's going on with a lot of police departments. I think either A, they don't have the training, or B, I mean, it's such an uncomfortable topic. Maybe they've just like, okay, we've contacted CPS. Kind of like we've done right. our thing. Like that's it. Somebody else's ball to take now down the field. So,
right. If CPS didn't find anything, why should we look into it? And that's essentially part of what happened in Kara's case. Kara's case is much worse. That's just nefarious. The cops. Essentially, what happened was there was all kinds of crime that her ex Tom Beal was committing that the cops were ignoring. So once he killed his kid, having him charged with murder created a big mess for them, because then they'd have to explain why all of these other crimes were investigated and not properly thoroughly. And what would have happened if he was charged with one of these other things? Could his son have been saved? And so that's why they're going with the unexplained. I don't know. Nothing really happened here. A 3-year-old just happened to die. So that's just one example. I don't know if it's uncomfortable. Maybe it's just tricky. I don't know what it is. Can I say one thing about Johnny Depp, Amber Heard trial?
Anything you want.
There's a lot of stuff, but one thing that I picked up on is, you know, everybody said, oh, you know, domestic violence, it's so hard to know a real allegation from a fake one. It's so difficult. And that's one of the reasons why we don't cover this. You know what? Most people came to the exact same conclusion. And one reason, because in a fair and orderly manner, both sides presented their evidence, and people can discern fake from real when evidence is presented in a fair, reasonable manner. So when you hear these family court judges or these lawyers or guardian ad litem say, you know, it's really tricky to know who's telling the truth. Well, you know what? It wasn't that tricky in Amber Heard and Johnny Depp. How come almost everyone believes Johnny Depp? How come almost everyone? How is that any different? You know, these are domestic violence. These are things that happen supposedly behind closed doors. These are supposedly he said, she said. And yet everyone seems to have come to the same conclusion, a very reasoned conclusion. And that's because in that trial, both sides are allowed to present evidence in a clear, orderly fashion. So when you hear these judges and family courts say, I just don't know, it's so difficult. Well, that's probably because when you allow evidence to be presented, it's not presented fairly. It's not presented orderly. And so, of course, it's difficult because you're not doing your job allowing both sides to present their evidence.
That's a good point. I mean, if people can get this from this crazy celebrity trial, they should be able to get it on the local and state level. Come on.
Right. But don't let people tell you that these issues are difficult to decipher. We all just experienced together 6 weeks of these issues, and it doesn't seem like it was that difficult to decipher. All right. When the evidence was presented fairly, it was easy to tell that Johnny was telling the truth and she wasn't. And I think, look, not in every case, obviously mistakes can be made, but this idea that domestic violence is so difficult to know, it's so difficult to know when it's true, when it's not, I don't think it's as difficult as people claim. And I think this Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial is an example of that. So the important thing is to get it into courts with due process and fair presentation of evidence. And that's, of course, what's not happening in family courts.
That's truth. Mm-hmm. Well, Michael, it's been a pleasure to talk with you again, even though the topics are dark and horrible. Mm-hmm. I know you got a new site and a new place for people to follow you, as well as your own interviews going on. Tell people how they can support you, follow you, and otherwise just help out.
Yeah. Right. It's michaelvolpe.substack.com, and you can sign up for a free subscription. You get every time one of my article comes out within seconds, it emailed to your email. And then there's a paywall. It's $5.99 a month or $59 for the year. And so then that gender dysphoria post, including the entire audio recording of that hearing, is behind the paywall. So that's one of the things. I just communicated with a prisoner from Pennsylvania, wrongfully convicted for child molestation, is being abused in prison because they don't like child molesters. So you can check that out also behind the paywall. His name is Joe Marcy. Maybe you'll bring me back up another time. Wrongful convictions is another topic nobody talks about. And I think a lot of our prisoners are wrongfully convicted. Not like a majority, a lot, but 10% or more. When you think about how many prisoners that is, that's a very significant number. And how often you hear somebody talking about wrongful convictions? Almost never. And it's an important topic.
That's the truth. Yeah, you're more than welcome anytime. I love talking to you, and you always have a lot of great information. And I want to plug your Facebook, too. Your Facebook, you always have wonderful posts on there, so I want to direct people there also. You always got great videos and information.
Okay, yeah, check me out on Facebook. I'm Michael Volpe, and thank you for having me.
Indeed. Well, if you'll stick around for about 30 seconds, I'll talk to you at the end.
Okay.
All right, thank you. All right, folks, it's just me now. Let me see here. That's right there. So, thanks for being with us today, folks. In case you missed it, we'll have everything at AnomicAge.com. And I want to encourage people to go back to some of these previous Michael Volpe interviews as well. I think this is our fourth one, and every single one of them is just chock full of a wealth of information on family courts, on CPS. And we got to get him back on to talk a little wrongful convictions as well. A wealth of information, folks. Check them all out if you can. As I always say, you can't do everything, but you can do something. Please try to get out there and do your part and make that difference. Until next time, be safe out there, and I will be seeing you sooner than later in the Anomic Age.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age Project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to AnomicAge.com. That's AnomicAge.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm gonna go to bed.